Hello, I am Mean Gene Oakland, and welcome to the 10 o'clock audio play. I will be your narrator for this evening's entertainment. Howard Finkel will not be with you this evening after coming down with a slight case of scurvy after voyaging the seven seas. There was a distinct lack of vitamins A, B and C, and didn't suck on enough lemons. I caught her gambling for a daddy treacle. My father was a great man. He was a man with an imagination, an inventive mind, an innovator if you like. He single-handedly dominated the yoghurt trade in Spennymoor, County Durham. I remember he was quite a local celebrity. He was always on the road selling his yoghurt and spreading the word of the Crinkle brand. I remember him doing a roadshow tour in the early 80s when I was a boy. He was in the peak in those days. I fondly remember him waxing lyrical to an astonished crowd at Peace Hall in Halifax, the climax of the tour. He was never at home much, and when he was, you'd find him in the garage, which he had converted into a yoghurt factory. The Crinkle Paperclip Mill, he called it. I recall the excitement of peeking through the crack, seeing my dadda mixing the pre-cultured milk into his vat of creation, adding the odd spoonful of pectin, which formed into various jams, jellies, and gels. I recall the bubble of joy in my tum-tum as I saw him insert the final ingredient, sucralose, of course. I loved the yoghurt world, and knew that when I was a man, I too would be a man of the yog, a yoggy man, at the helm of the Temple Yoghurt, with a gold member's pass for the hotel curd. Dad was always creative with yoghurt, but he wasn't always solely dedicated to that particular area. Apparently, in the late 70s, he had toyed with other fermented dairy products. Shankleesh, the Turkish sphere of delight. Smetana.
Commonly served with Russian pickled cucumber.
And of course, kumis. But when he knew his destiny lay in the realm of the yoghurt, he was keen to experiment with new flavours. Don't get me wrong, he loved the traditional assortments of peach, strawberry, the odd bit of toffee and fudge. But he knew there were other areas. Those untouched and undiscovered virgin flavours, so unused in the dairy dimension. I remember my astonishment that evening when he gave a presentation in the family dining room, showing us his new brands. It was 1988 and I was 17. To me, Dad was a hero. He was a maverick for sure. No one had dared to do what he was doing.
"My dear family,"
he said in his great manner, addressing us at the table, pointer in hand, and the yoggy slideshow already. You could see the excitement on his face, his glasses steamed up, his armpits all moisty.
"I have gathered you here today to show you the next chapter in the tale of Crinkle's yoghurt. Here, I have exciting new flavours."
Dad clicked on the first slide and began. The first flavour was stressed follicle. Apparently it was a mix of atmosphere from a shop that was going bankrupt and shavings from a lost turban. Amazingly, I had a quick taste. It was frightfully delicious. It was like sucking meat juice off a hammy leather buckle. We told Dad it was great, and that he was sure on for a winner. Boy oh boy, supermarkets and shops would snap it up immediately. We were all sure of this. Then he showed us the second flavour. This one was called Brisk Wedgwood. I took a spoonful, and my God, it was otherworldly. A fine blend of bloated canal fluid, carbon walks and fridge filings. The final flavour, we were told, was the best of all. His masterpiece, as he called it. It was called, I Caught Her Gambling for a Daddy Treacle. And he was right. It was the best of the bunch. It was like fading away into a lost, guilty void of yoghurt abandonment. I can't describe it. Quite simply, it changed my life. We all remember that point in our lives that altered it all. When you know nothing will ever be the same again. For some, it's their first dabble, fumble, their first shag. The moment they began to feel like a man. Might be when they graduated, for instance. But for me, that time came when I tasted that yoghurt. I caught her gambling for a daddy treacle. That was it. My path was decided. I would donate my life to Crinkle's yoghurt. There was no turning back.
literally. Dad was pleased to hear that I wanted to join him in his business and was instantly encouraging. We went out to town the very next day and he bought me my very own tailored suit. In the afternoon, we sat in the cafe eating biopod to ease our bowels as Dad told me the history of the yogurt trade.
Son, it's a very complex story that dates back before any of us were born,
he said.
It started with the yogurt pioneers over 5,000 years ago. Brave men who challenged the taste buds, expanded the horizons of dairy-based products, and brought new meaning to the phrase, taster. The very first flavors were pretty basic. Your peaches, your raspberries, your figgy. It was all bog standard, yet delicious fare. It wasn't until the 1930s that a few radicals dared to experiment with the yogurt formula. I say dared for a reason.
There was a silence, and Dad's face looked haunted.
What do you mean, Dad?
Well, son, some folk weren't happy with the rules being challenged. These people became commonly known as the Yogurt Puritans. They were feared by anyone who even thought about bringing new flavors to the steady market. The Yogurt Puritans dominated the scene with a stony, silent presence. No one dared challenge them, so the Puritans never needed to even speak. They wore ruffled, frilled collars, linen mop caps, shit brown slacks, pumps made of potato waffles, and long black capes that blew in the wind. Strangely, even when there was no wind at all. Some rode on horseback, others rode combat-ready chariots. But they all had the same mission in mind, and that was to sustain the yogurt tradition. Anyone who wanted new varieties of yog, besides the established brands, became a wanted man in their eyes. But it wasn't easy to become a member of the Yogurt Puritan sect. There was quite a strict initiation ceremony. At first you had to sign up, of course, and a complex application form made from fucking crackers was sent out to your address. It was said that you could only fill it in with margarine. After that, the application was considered and put through a series of tests. The committee had several meetings to consider the potential member, and in about a year, they would reply if they could be bothered in the form of a wicker BAP. Then, if you got a BAP back accepting you, you were summoned to appear at their headquarters, dressed in specified rags, yogurt-related regalia. Reportedly, their main HQ was, and is, situated in a huge barn made of cake and oaty wood. Upon entrance, you had to utter the password to the man on the door, which was supposedly as simple as, I like yogurt. Then, you would be sent to the main hall, where all the members of the sect were gathered. The head of the Puritans was, and is, Daddy Treacle. A bearded sod and devotee of the Yog cause. He has been the leader since, 1939, I believe, and is really old. In his time, he has campaigned for yogurt rights, appeared at many social functions and din-dins in the dairy inner circle, yet remains an enigma of a man. When being greeted by Daddy Treacle at the HQ, the applicant must partake in a strange, occasionally degrading series of initiation tasks. Firstly, he has to do the fandango with Bigfoot, before copping off with him after too many eggnogs. Then, the next task is a role-playing game, where the hopeful chap must act like a bread bin, while established members offer their loaves to him. Malt, fruit loaf, granary, and mighty whitey. He must accept them, this being one of the key factors of being a bread bin man. The third part of the ceremony requires much effort. You are forced to live like a mole for a week, with blindfold, strap-on knob for a snout, and a puddle o' mud to call your home. Fellow members morph into violent beavers to enhance the believability of the task, while others act as game hunters who want to fuck you up and make mole pie out of your face and kill you or summit. If you pass this test, you become a yogurt Puritan for life. There is no way out. Understand? No way out. They brand your face with steaming hot yogurt and spread it on your skin with a wooden leg. The area is left charred and you are forever recognized as a Puritan.
I sat in fear as Dad told me the tale, the myths and the folklore of these protectors of the holy yogi. I wondered if that made Dad and me wanted outlaws, for we were on the cutting edge of the new advancements of yogurt evolution. We were everything they despised. Challengers of the rules that were set in Nugget.
Are they after us, Dad?
Dad aside and ate some more biopot. The shit lowered in his papa belly.
They are. I'm on their red list for elimination, son.
I felt saddened at the thought of them catching Dad and ruining our bright future.
What would they do to you, Dad?
Dad paused and sighed. He said nothing.
Tell me!
I pressed. Dad changed the subject.
Yes, I think we need more yoghurt,
he said, leaving the table to retrieve more from the dairy bar. Later in the same day, Dad and I had an appointment with a large yoghurt company based in Spennymoor called...
We got to take Measure Blues.
They were the leading distributors of cutting-edge products and were also on the red list for the Puritans. The head of the corporation was the fuck machine, Jim Power, and Daddy Treacle wanted his head on a fucking crumpet. They sought out new and interesting flavours. Famously, they'd released the much-celebrated generous goat beard flavour, which was made of Jewish humour, wanky cloth and chunks of cheap video feedback. They were a very exciting company, and when my dad informed them of the latest flavour, they were eager to check it out. Dad and me headed to the
We Got to Take Measure Blues
headquarters and stood before the board of directors. The fuck machine, Jim Power, was at the head of the table, chewing a pen and eyeing us up and down. He looked excited about Daddy's presentation.
We are, boys,
said the fuck machine, Jim Power, in his thick Texan accent.
I'm ready when you are, boys.
He tipped his cowboy hat as Dad opened his briefcase and pulled out a sample of his secret weapon. I caught her gambling for a Daddy Treacle. The fuck machine, Jim Power, liked the bite of the title and his irony. If Daddy Treacle knew that a radical new yoghurt flavour was being named after him, he would have shat out audio cassettes of Haircut 100. In other words, he'd have been pissed off big time. Dad explained the appeal of his new flavour and handed a spoon to the fuck machine, Jim Power, and a beaker of fresh yoghurt. He smirked at Dad and took a spoonful of the yog.
Here goes,
he said, before swallowing it down. For a moment, the fuck machine, Jim Power, smiled and his face lit up like a Vegas titty bar. He lowered the spoon and then back into his chair.
Whew, I'm gonna tell you something. That's the best darn yoghurt I've ever tasted, boy.
His team of ass lickers immediately broke into applause, and Dad and me stood there proudly. This was our moment. The fuck machine, Jim Power, stood to his feet and slowly walked around the table.
That is one great flavor, mister. I'm telling you, that stuff will fly off the fucking shelves.
He likes it, Dad,
I said excitedly. Dad smiled at me.
This is going to be the next generous goat beard. Mark my words, it's going to be a huge.
Dad and me were thrilled to learn that the fuck machine, Jim Power, wanted 10,000 pots to start with, and he gave us an advance of £1,000 to get started. After handshakes and backpats aplenty, Dad and I left the boardroom as happy as a pair of purring leopards. Dad and I got in the car, grinning from ear to ear, and feeling mighty white about our futures as yoghurt revolutionaries.
Yeah, alright. Yeah, I think you're great. Yeah, I think you're good. Yeah, well, alright. Yeah, so good. Yeah, I think you're great. Oh yeah, so special. Oh yeah.
We were terribly excited about working for the fuck machine, Jim Power. Dad was at the wheel.
This is great news for us, isn't it, son? To think I caught her gambling for a Daddy Treacle will be on the shelves by the end of the month. How amazing is that? We'll be famous in the dairy world. Perhaps more famous than my idol, Laffy Fromage, the Milk Eyes. We might end up with our names on the Spennymoor Walk of Fame. Right aside other legends like Butterbean and Dr. Cheddar Chops, the Cheesy Puff. Press will be hounding us for interviews, surrounding the Crinkle Paperclip Mill like vultures, wanting a soundbite for the Spennymoor Minutely, the Butter Bulletin Monthly, or the Daily Dairy. We is gonna be a success, boy!
But then, just after he had oozed positive hopes, I noticed Dad's face turn sour and drip with grey dread.
What's up, Dad?
I asked.
I realised that we are out of the main ingredient for the Daddy Treacle yoghurt.
Which ingredient, Dad?
I asked.
The main ingredient, son. A minute-long recording of the mumblings between a dock leaf, a weed, blade of grass, or any similar greenery of the wild. Problem is, there is only one field where I can gather a full minute of green mumblings from. The field of doom and shame. The field is owned by...
There was a silence, and Dad's face looked haunted by dairy spirits, lost souls who had fallen into the lagoon of milk guilt long before we both existed. I think I knew just who owned this piece of land. Dad replied, as quick as milk being pulled from a cow's fucking udder.
The field is owned by the Yoghurt Puritans. It is risky, though so very risky, daring to enter into Puritan land. I've been before, but I left quickly before the Puritans could get me.
I heard of others before me who were caught by them.
Legend has it that a yoghurt rebel by the name of Kinky Kint was captured when trying to record the mumblings in the field. It's a sad story. Apparently the Puritans turned him into a gingerbread man, putting in currants for eyes, dipping him in jam, and then setting him loose in the wild. He didn't have a fucking clue what had happened, and as a result, he was very confused when he looked at his hands to see they were a rather dark, malty brown, and covered in candy sprinkles. The bastards even gave him a pocket-sized mirror just so he could get a full look at his fucky face. He was constantly smiling due to his syrup-painted grin and his smarty nose, even though inside he wanted to die. He was in pastry hell. Fed up, he rushed to the nearest canal to drown himself. But when he got there, he realised he didn't even have any lungs anymore, and couldn't do away with himself in that way. Instead, he gently floated on top of the water, as biscuit-craving carp nibbled on his corners. Then, when his gingerbread feet were merely stumps, the Puritans fished him out of the water and proceeded to devour him in a beast-like manner. They bit chunks off him, but left him able enough to move about a bit. Then, rather cruelly, they put him in a taxi, where he sat in the back with his arms folded, looking out of the window as the cab driver made polite conversation about the weather.
"Yes, it is quite warm,"
Clint said, as his face dripped off onto the slinky leather upholstery. Then they reached Clint's family home, and Clint knocked on the door. His wife answered the door and saw before her a half-munched wreck.
"What the hell are you?"
she screamed in horror, trying to close the door on his beast. But he managed to wedge his crumbling stump in the door.
"It's me, Clint, your fella."
But she didn't believe him, of course, as his candy grin was all dripping off his face, and he had only one currant eye left. He was crying treacle tears and begging for her to let him in the house. Then the kids, obviously awoken by the commotion, came downstairs and saw the hideous wreck, claiming to be their father. The family didn't believe him, though, no matter how much he insisted he was there. Sweet Daddy. In the end, the family had no choice. They had to destroy him, for his voice was too loud, and he was waking up Nana. They threw his flowery body into the garden, where he was screaming in tears and turmoil, and they went to work on him with rounders' bats. They kicked him into the mud and beat him into fine gingerbread dust, until only his head remained, while he still proclaimed to be their father. Then the mum started a bonfire, and the kids, laughing loudly like hyenas, put his head onto the wild flames. He screeched in agony as his pastry orb of a head was burnt into a crisp. But still, his spirit remained in the dust, alive and in torment. Forever tortured by the fact that his children were laughing, as they wiped out their dear daddy. They, on the other hand, forever waited for the return of their dad, and he watched them grow through the years. Never able to speak to them, but merely see them enter adulthood, all the while lamenting about the loss of their dad. They assumed he had just left town. His wife, his sweet, sweet wife, was always bitter that her husband of 15 years had left without a single goodbye. Not only that, Clint had to watch her find a new man, A man who enjoyed life in his house. Summer barbecues, fine wines, and penetrative sex on the lawn above him, where his dusty ashes remained, scattered on the grass. That, my son, is what will happen if the Yogurt Puritans find us in their field.
I sat back in the seat in shock at Dad's story. I knew the Puritans were bad, but I had no idea they were this evil. I was also worried that my dad might end up like Kinky Clint, a pile of ashes on our lawn, forever in turmoil, mental agony and muck. Me and Dad were eager to be pioneers of yogurt delight, but I had no idea it would mean risking my life. This was horrific stuff, but I couldn't pull out of the plan now. The contract was signed with the Fuck Machine Gym Power. And we had our £1,000 advance in a suitcase. All the new mint condition crisp notes. Me and Dad had to get the vital ingredient, recordings of green mumblings. There was nothing else to do. We had been driving down the highway for hours. It was becoming darker now and the sun was being all shy and hiding somewhere. I think he was scared too, that the Yogurt Puritans might come out to play. We pulled the car up at the side of the field of doom and shame and took a deep breath. Dad got out the car first, his dictaphone in his hand, and I soon followed, nervous and shaky. There was a gate into the field, but Dad and I didn't want to use it, as we were afraid the opening of it might alert the Puritans, so instead we shuffled our bodies through a hedge and entered the field. The grass was high around us, and for miles around all you could see was green. We pricked up our ears, and sure enough could hear, quietly, the mumblings of the grass, dock leaves, privets, and the weeds. Dad excitedly and rather hurriedly pressed record on his tape. I heard the mumbling. Most of it was incoherent, but every now and then I could pick out a sentence amidst the nonsense. I heard one. It said,
"I kept telling her with insistence that she bury the poor manoeuvres and leave town in a hurry."
Then I heard another, from a nettle bush.
"She called me in from next door to fix the leaky tap. I took her out of the wrench and she made me a chip buddy. Salad cream I asked for, and I got it too."
There was one from a branch.
"Kingdom of Madness has got me undone!"
Dad was hunched over slightly, recording the babbling and looking around in fear, sweating all over his face. He seemed very nervous. We wanted out of there immediately, but we had to get exactly 1 minute's worth of recording before we could go. I kept a lookout, my eyes facing north. I couldn't see anyone around, so it seemed we were safe, and would get out of there with the required ingredients. But I could not stop thinking about Kinky Clint and his poor family. I dreaded being caught by those nasty Puritans. Finally, a minute passed, and Dad put the dictaphone in his pocket.
"Come on, son,"
he said.
"Let's get out of here, quick."
But before we could start running, we heard a peculiar sound. It was a huge thud that shook the world around us. Birds flew from trees, leaves crumbled at the sound of it, and Dad and me looked to one another in shock. Then, over the hill, I saw a shape appearing, brown and towering in the distance. Dad and I were frozen to the spot in curiosity, our eyes wide open in shock. Almost instinctively we dived into the nearby shrub for cover and peered out through the gaps. Then, it appeared, 80 feet tall, like a skyscraper with legs and a face. It was a gingerbread man, the biggest imaginable. It had giant Eccles cakes for eyes, a huge flapjack for a nose, and a mouth painted on. Only this one wasn't smiling. It was miserable as fuck and clearly out for our blood. Its huge eyes scanned the area. I think it was aware we were lurking around and wanted to capture us.
"Oh my god! I didn't think these things really existed. I thought they were folklore. Something fishwise told their naughty kids to put them off defying yogurt laws. Oh my god, these were made by the Puritans. Huge men of gingerbread sent out to seek non-Puritans. Sinners like you and me, son! Sinners like you and me! Oh, da-da!"
Dad's words haunted my throat, and I began to quiver in fear. The gingerbread man clumsily stomped around the field, his clunky feet destroying trees at each step. I saw one of the steps kill an entire family of badgers, and they all howled in fear as a foot came tumbling down on them, crushing them into a pathetic pulp. Then the huge candyman looked in our direction and stopped. His eyes were gazing our way, and for a moment I thought he had seen us. For over 20 seconds he glared at our shrub, and it seemed as if his eyes were totally fixed on mine. His whole body was motionless too, which made it even more unsettling. Dad grabbed my arm, as if to keep me safe from harm. But I could tell he was more afraid than I was, for he knew what this gingerbread beast was capable of. Then, in a moment that made me sigh with relief, the gingerbread monster began to turn his head, as if he had given up on the search. But all of a sudden, he swung his face back round at the speed of light in a flawless movement, like two single frames of film. He screamed at us, a scream that started deep and eventually ended up as a deafening high howl that rattled my skull. As he screeched, from out of his mouth came biscuits, flying at us at a heavy, speedy rate, and we found ourselves showered with bourbons, custard creams, fig rowels, rich teas and Pink Panther wafers. They hurt quite a bit, and a bourbon was wedged in my dad's eye. He yelped in pain. After I pulled it out, he said,
I can't see out of this eye anymore!
But that wasn't our main concern. At that point, as a towering snack was pointing at us and screaming out,
DONKEY!
Then, from behind him, over the hill, I heard the strangest sound, which can best be described as a relentless charge of an army. Dad and I stood to our feet, stiffened up in horror. There they were, the infamous young Puritans, rushing towards us in their masses. There were huge chariots, the wheels of which were made out of giant digestives. The only thing was, the biscuits were not perfectly spherical, so the oscillation of the wheels was somewhat jerky and uneven, but they were still persistent, even as their medieval haircuts flopped around. On one I saw a topless Adonis of a man, with long golden locks blowing in the wind as he charged towards us. His co-pilot had a bow and arrow and was taking shots at me and my dada. There were also Puritans on foot, with shields made of Jaffa cakes. I presume the use of Jaffa would have helped to deflect the blows from blunt objects, mace, toffee hour, etc.
If you notice, Jaffa's have a soft, pillowy feel which would make for a fine defence.
Some of the troops were firing from guns, out of which came different assortments of yoghurt, which they were firing at us with vigorous enthusiasm. I saw misfired yoghurt shots setting fire to trees, so I knew we were in deep danger. And then, in the centre of this storming brigade, I saw the leader of the Puritans, Daddy Treacle. He was laid back in an immaculate chariot made from Caramac, the golden creamy bar. He had two whores in bear masks, tweaking his man nipples and rubbing him down with cornmeal as he lounged back, topless with his golden brown body glistening in the sun.
"Get them heathens!"
he said, pointing our way with his long, girly fingernails. The man riding Daddy Treacle's chariot forth was a pig-faced man in medieval garb and toffee apple in his mouth. Then, in a movement of horror, from behind the army of Puritans came a raging sea of yogi, flowing like tides of vengeance, consuming everything in its path. Some Puritans were riding the yogurt waves on surfboards made of the World War II ration recipe for carrot cookies. It was a wrath of the Puritans, unleashing itself on me and my dad. We were sinners. Dad and I began to run in fear, sprinting away as fast as we could from the army of purity. We kept looking behind us to see if they were gaining on us. We were horrified to learn that they were. Our feet were no match for their biscuit-powered chariots. I saw the gingerbread man stuck in a corner of the field, clumsily scrambling around, confused and baffled by the action. After all, he was a mere seeker of intruders, and in battle was somewhat useless due to his sheer bulk. Finally, we made it to the hedge, and speedily I flew through it to safety. Out of the field of doom, Dad was just behind me, and in a moment of panic he flung himself through the air and found himself jammed in the bush. As a ragged, sharp branch impaled itself through his shoulder, Dad yelped out like a dog boy, and I turned around to pull him out. But he knew it was hopeless, and that it was all over for him.
Here!
He cried, throwing the dictaphone and car keys in my way in a desperate moment.
Take these and get out of here, son! Make Daddy proud! No!
I screamed out, stretching my arm out to pull him from the hell that was about to occur, but it was too late. I will never forget that howl coming from his agonized face as he was so quickly pulled out of the hedge and back into the field. It was done so quickly. 1 second he was there, the next he was gone. I had in my hand the car keys and the recordings of the grass mumblings, and I could have just easily got out of there, forever oblivious to my father's fate. So curiously, I peered through the gap where the bastards had dragged him through, and there it was, point blank up to mine, the sinister face, grinning from ear to ear, with a mouthful of yoghurt, it dribbled from his bloated lips. As I ran back to the car to escape my own demise, I sped out of there in the car, my head turning back to the field every now and then to ensure there was no one on my tail. But sure enough, in the rearview mirror, I spotted the sprinting figure of the gingerbread man, brimming with cocksure confidence, the shadow of his bulk perfectly cast against the darkening sky and the orange blaze of the setting sun.